Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from fibromyalgia patient Krista, who will be sharing her story dealing with this condition. So, for our audience, if you could introduce yourself and take us through a little bit of your diagnosis process, that'd be great.
Okay. My name is Krista Desjardins. I reacted to my flu shot, actually, in 2018. And then I was really sick for a full month after my flu shot. I couldn't do anything. I couldn't take care of my kids. I had to have people over here helping me. And then I went to like three different hospitals and nobody was like giving me answers. So I spent like all the rest of like 2019 going to, a holistic doctor. So I went to London, and saw a holistic doctor, and like his test results said like I had so many things that were off. It was crazy. But I didn't know if I should believe it or not. And then, so I knew I had to keep fighting, like, with my doctor to, like, run more tests because I knew something was obviously off. But, like, they weren't finding anything. And every test that I went for, like, nothing was showing up. My blood work, nothing. So then he started, like, I told him to test, like, my autoimmune stuff and, like, my rheumatoid stuff. And that's when I was diagnosed in June 2019 with fibromyalgia. But to me, like, I was expecting a diagnosis, so I wasn't really, like, shocked about it.
So, how did you go about separating myth from fact and all that, in so much as you knew something was wrong, but a lot of it was coming back and saying there's nothing wrong? How did you know?
Yeah, it was just kind of, like, ruling everything out, trying to get to the bottom of it, and I still don't really feel 100% that it's the correct diagnosis. Like, I still feel there's more off than just fibro. But who knows? I live a very stressful life, so the stress actually causes fibro to be worse. So, you know what I mean? Like, like, it's something that I deal with all the time, so maybe it is just, like, severe fibromyalgia. I don't know.
So, what sort of coping mechanisms have you used to keep yourself strong and keep the condition
well,
at
like,
bay?
So many things. Like, obviously with fibro, like, I get exhausted. Like, I'm so physically drained before I even get out of bed in the morning. And then by the time I take a shower and, like, get dressed, and I go upstairs to my room to get dressed, and I'm just like, ugh, like, I could just fall asleep on my bed. Like, the exhaustion is so extreme some days. And other days, it's like, I have energy, but I'm still always just tired. Like, it's a constant brain fog and exhaustion that I cannot escape. So things that I do to kind of help is, like, obviously coffee all day long. Like, you know what I mean? Like, trying to get through it. Or, you know, you just have to force yourself to keep going. Otherwise, like, the second I sit down, it's game over. Like, I lose my motivation, my energy, everything. So I have to force myself to keep going. So that's one of the things is, like, your mind, your mindset has to be strong for coping with fibromyalgia. But I'm not always strong. I'll admit that. I think with COVID-19 this year, and then my fibro and everything, like, I've actually gone on antidepressants. In the spring, we were supposed to get married in the spring, and my wedding was canceled. So when COVID started and everything was locked down, I went through severe depression. Obviously, you know, like, it's grief, right? I was grieving the loss of my wedding. And then, so I went through a lot, you know, like, so, but I'm just tired. Like, the exhaustion doesn't go away. So it's just, like, I don't know. It's a mix between, like, seasonal depression and everything. My body doesn't actually cope very well, so that's why I'm on the antidepressants.
So do you find that society at large understands what the condition is and what sort of physical reactions you're having? Say you
absolutely not. No, nobody understands it because it's not something they can visually see.
So what would you like people to know about the whole process? What you do?
Well, you know what, like, the thing is that people undermine fibromyalgia and they think there's the cure. They think there's a cure, and they think the cure is exercise, and that's what they tell people, just exercise, just exercise. Well, obviously, that's easier said than done for most people. I mean, some people would tell me, oh, I'm just making up excuses. Well, no, like, I'm not making up excuses. It's a matter of, like, it's unrealistic, you know? Like, you have to set realistic goals. If other people are just jumping in and saying, well, you should do this, you should do that, obviously, they're not your goals, and they're unrealistic. So listening to outsiders is really hard. You just kind of have to force yourself to be strong and listen to yourself and what your body requires.
So,
you know, like, what other people have to say isn't going to help, usually.
So if you could see any support added for those affected with fibromyalgia, what would it be?
Definitely in-home support. I think it is a disability, and I think that, like, I'm not on disability, but I qualify for it. My doctor said that I could get on disability. Now, I feel like that should just go hand in hand with the diagnosis, in my opinion, because it's, especially in today's society, in today's world, the pressures of life, there's no way someone with fibromyalgia can just cope with life. Because if it is fibromyalgia that I have, and this is really what fibromyalgia is, it's hard. Like, it's hard for me every day. I struggle. And the worst place I struggle is in my mind. You know what I mean? Like, it's definitely my mind, because it's like, oh, my body feels this way. But I could force myself to get up and do something, but sometimes I just choose to listen to my body instead.
So, in terms of keeping your mind motivated, what sort of methods do you use? How do you talk yourself out of those moments when you just say, I can't do it?
Well, honestly, I stopped battling with myself, and I don't right now. I don't battle myself. I just give up. If I'm too tired, like, it's winter time. Winter time is not my season. I just want to be in my pajamas, like, on the couch, which is bad for fibro because it just causes the flare to hurt even more. But it's really, like, where my energy's at, you know? What was the question again? Sorry.
Was, how do you keep yourself mentally motivated?
Yeah, it's hit or miss. It just depends, like, what I'm motivating for, I think. You know, is it something that really interests me? Is it something that really needs to get done? What's the timeline? What, you know, like, groceries? How long have I put groceries off before I can actually say, okay, now I really need to leave my house after a week of not going out? You know what I mean?
Like, thank you for taking the time out. But if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Karen Chambers, the Bob Rumbaugh Center for the Deaf. So tell me a little bit about the latest happenings with the Rumbaugh Center for the Deaf.
The latest happenings. Well, we have we've been sort of derailed. Just in terms of, you know, our strategic plan goals and all that kind of stuff in dealing with COVID, as I'm sure everybody in the world is experiencing. So that's the short answer to your question.
So for those who might not be as familiar with your work, COVID notwithstanding, can you tell me a little bit about the programs and services generally offered?
Yeah, so all of our services are designed to meet the unique needs of deaf individuals, deaf or hard of hearing individuals. So our services are all delivered in an accessible way. And the services that we do provide throughout all the Rumble organizations, we have a deaf camp up in Parry Sound. We have a long-term care center in Barrie. And we have our developmental services operations in Milton and Toronto. We have the Children's Mental Health Program in Milton that reaches out to people. Actually, that's the one really great thing about COVID is that it has moved us into a more virtual platform, which allows us to meet people where they live. So that's been helpful for our mental health program designed for deaf children and youth and their families. We also provide supportive housing in the community and also at our center on Bayview, and have a program designed to meet the needs of deaf seniors. I think we also have educational programs. So we have an early years center in Toronto, and we also have a we offer sign language classes to the general public, and we also do we are a multi-purpose center for sure. We also have learning instruction for newcomers to Canada, and literacy and basic skills. We deliver that as well. So that's it in a nutshell, Cam.
So in terms of supportive housing you mentioned, I assume that would include things like accessible fire alarms done in a visual way, things of that nature.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, all of our locations are equipped with visual fire alarms and sort of, when your doorbell goes off, you hear it ringing, ours flash, the lights flash in the house. So all that kind of equipment is used.
So in terms of the newcomers to Canada, for those who are deaf or hard of hearing, do you ever find there are any cultural differences in how to help them navigate the system or programs and services for the deaf and hard of hearing community?
Yeah, there are many cultural differences, actually. You know, as you may be aware, I mean, deafness is it's a language, it involves a language and a culture. So there is just even within, even within our staffing complement, there's the deaf culture and hearing culture, which we're all continually navigating. And then with the people that we support, certainly newcomers to Canada, that program is learning instruction. And, it's anything really from life skills to really around navigating Canada and the place that that people have chosen to come to live. So there are many cultural differences. A lot of homespun kind of language, if you will. It's very interesting. It's great work, and it's a great opportunity for our newcomers. So, and we navigate all types of cultural, I don't want to say issues because they're not really issues, but
idiosyncrasies,
I guess. Yeah, lots of diversity, yeah.
So you mentioned things have been a little tougher with COVID this year. Are you taking any steps to ensure that you'll be able to continue to provide the support that seems quite meaningful and since you're working on a large scale, it's important work. So do you have any steps in mind to keep things running efficiently and effectively?
Yeah, so we've been working really hard. You know, I keep hearing the word pivot being used. So I feel we've got a fabulous IT team, and every day we're grateful for them. So as I mentioned earlier, you know, with our children and youth mental health program, it's a lot of it has become virtual. In fact, most of it is virtual now, which allows us to reach beyond our physical borders. And you know, we used to run in developmental services. We used to run you know, a typical day program, which, you know, would be activities and things like that within the community for people that we support. So that's really been hindered a fair bit, obviously, with the, you know, in Toronto, our location in Toronto is under lockdown. So, you know, our movement is just completely limited. So we're sort of redesigning pretty much everything that we're doing right now. And I think a lot of it was, you know, it's good timing, really, because there is a shift in developmental services in terms of, you know, truly being part of the fabric of a community. You know, that is community living in a nutshell. And so we are, I think, you know, we're sort of taking this time to look at how we reorganize this, all of our services that we're providing, whether it's in person, whether it's virtual, whether it's a hybrid of both, but always at the core of everything is deaf culture and language.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure. Thanks, Cam.
Of course. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Canadian Blood Services invites you to save a life today. Every 60 seconds, someone in Canada needs blood. Donating is simple, and your blood will go to help Canadians undergoing heart surgery, leukemia treatment, or those involved in an accident. Go online and book your appointment today at www.blood.ca or give us a call toll-free at 1-888-2-DONATE. That's 1-888-236-6283.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Karen Chambers from the Rumball Center for the Deaf and from fibromyalgia survivor Krista Desjardins. In this segment of our show, Ken Pope will take us through some of the issues of poverty and disability. So, for those who are on Ontario Works, but should be on ODSP, what are some of the challenges associated?
Well, first, the most obvious challenge is that they are on Ontario Works and they're broke. And they should be on ODSP. It means they have a disability of some sort. And even at the simplest level, it means that they can't function in a competitive workplace. So obviously, they're probably going to have some trouble keeping their situation together. And, you know, what we found historically is that even for people who apply for ODSP themselves, even if they're not on ODSP, on Ontario Works, for example, about 64% of them don't succeed because they're the ones trying to apply, right? They have disabilities. And what we found also was that when we double-checked after the fact, one of the reasons that they applied themselves is they didn't have any family or community support. So they tried themselves, and yet here we have people who are applying for ODSP because they acknowledge that they have a disability, but they can't function in a competitive workplace, for example. so they are unsuccessful in their application. We found on appeal to the Social Benefit Tribunal that years ago, at least a number of these appeals, we succeeded in about 65% of the cases. So what you have here is a situation where the person applies and doesn't succeed, but in 65% of the cases, we would succeed. So there's obviously a gap here.
So in terms of Ontario Works and ODSP, you were saying earlier that they come from the same source, and there's not really any logic to trying to get Ontario Works when ODSP is appropriate, because it's an increased amount.
That's right, Rob. In simple numbers, approximately, Ontario Works is half of what ODSP would pay. So if you were in control of this funding pot, why would you spend money to get people to receive more money from that same pot? Just doesn't make, logically, from a corporate perspective, it doesn't make any sense, does it? Unless your real intent is to help people.
So, how can we get around these challenges? If I were an applicant, for example, trying to get ODSP, what are some of the options available to actually get on the right track as far as the application goes?
Well, if you're going to apply yourself and you don't have supports, what you do is you look at page 7 and 12 of the medical form, the part filled in by the doctor, and it has, let's say, 15 or 20 activities of daily living. One page is for physical restrictions, and the other is emotional or cognitive restrictions. And it's on a scale of 1 to 4, so you have to have as many 3s and 4s as you can get. If what you're sitting is lots of 1s and 2s and occasional 3s, well, you're not going to succeed. That's straightforward. So, you know, if you're doing it yourself, you have to make sure there's enough 3s and 4s that are filled in by the doctor. And we have a process for this. We're of course, retained by the parents because the person who's seeking ODSP themselves doesn't have money to pay us to assist them. So go ahead and you apply, but that's your first rule. Don't file something that doesn't have a lot of 3s and 4s on pages 7 and 12. And then if you do find you're declined, well, then go to your legal aid clinic. And it's unfortunate, but there's nobody to assist people to apply for ODSP. But there are legal aid clinics to assist you to appeal it to the Social Benefit Tribunal. There's also a private bar that does this work under legal aid certificates. I don't know how many lawyers actually do these because the legal aid tariff is so low. But a paralegal, perhaps, working with a lawyer, because it has to be, last I heard, it has to be billed through a lawyer, but perhaps paralegals can now do this. I know they can deal with tribunals. A paralegal could do the job and make a couple dollars as far as they're concerned. A lawyer, given the various alternatives, can't. You could be a paralegal and working from home, for example, and very modest tariff that the legal aid certificate would provide, you might be content with on a modest basis, but not if you have overheads and staff and so on. But that's the other alternative, is to apply, get turned down, and then go to the legal aid clinic, have them make the determination that you could succeed or should succeed, but you didn't. That's the first part of the certificate, that you get paid a small amount to make this opinion. And then the second part is a slightly larger amount of money to actually handle the application again. The clinics, however, are more fortunate in the sense that they have money available for reports and assessments, whereas the private bar on a legal aid certificate doesn't have those resources.
So this year, in terms of ODSP applications and the whole CERB situation, have there been any added complications to the process, or is it still relatively the same?
The same complication that anyone would have if they were working. If they were working and then lost their job because of COVID and they were getting unemployment insurance, if the unemployment insurance happened to exceed the amount of ODSP that they would receive, well, then, of course, they wouldn't get ODSP, even if they applied or did have a disability, because they have other income. But once that income, whether it's unemployment insurance payments or CERB payments or whatever they may be, once they end, then if you can't function in a competitive workplace anymore, because the accommodating workplace that you had is out of business, well, then you might perhaps be able to get ODSP.
So one thing I have noted this year, if the CERB payments coming in were of a higher amount, some people on ODSP have been able to get like a bare minimum amount just to retain the support.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, there are some cases where, you know, they've been able to retain drug and dental, but if a person, if the CERB exceeds ODSP, well then financially, you know, it's like any other amount. Now the CERB was treated as employment income, which is very unusual because unemployment insurance is not treated that way, nor is any other kind of a pension or a payment. But CERB was. I didn't expect that. You know, it was treated as employment income, so it did offset ODSP, but it didn't necessarily disqualify the person. But my understanding now is that the benefits are taken straight solely as income for ODSP purposes. So now they would. That's my understanding.
So I understand it as well. If a person temporarily received CERB or EI, there'd be a reinstatement process to ODSP once had it completed.
It could be, yeah.
Right. Thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you could stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Excellent.
Thanks. Truth, my friends, is there's no simple definition of disability, nor a simple definition of strength. Krista's story, coping with fibromyalgia, something I think a lot of us can relate to. If not in the fact that she was dealing with a difficult diagnosis, but in the idea that she had to go out of her way to get results from the medical establishment. It's all too common. I mean, if a doctor isn't there to listen and to try to understand the nature of a problem, what exactly are they doing there? I mean, I've said it a million times, Henry Ford did not build medical science. It's not about seeing how many people you can get in and out in an hour. Truth is, she's coped with it with remarkable strength. And the fact that she didn't give up until getting a diagnosis shows a persistence too many people with disabilities have to exhibit. As a patient, it is always your right to know what is happening with you. And if you don't get answers, there's nothing stopping you from getting a second opinion. Yeah, sometimes you'll get that doctor who feels somewhat threatened by the fact that you would actually take it upon yourself to try to understand things. They're not in a position to pronounce from the mouth. They know a great deal, that's true, that no one anywhere knows everything. But the fact that these doctors go to school all these years and ultimately graduate, it's not the end of the process, it's the beginning. They're going to see things in their careers and their learning, their exploration, they didn't prepare for. One of the key aspects to that is always keeping an open mind. For the fact is, everyone, no matter how many credentials they may have, has the potential to learn and grow by others. And yes, they do see a lot of patients in a day, and they don't always have the time or the energy to take all the steps we'd like to see them take, but there's got to be some balance, some middle ground that says, I can get the treatment I need and do so in a time-effective manner. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.